Well, Congressman Barletta, thanks for being here. It's good to have you.
Good to be here.
I just want to acknowledge that this has been a really tough campaign for you, and I know you lost your brother, and I just want to express our sympathy and condolences.
Thank you. It's been very rough, not only the loss of my brother. We had an 18-month-old grandson who's a twin who was just diagnosed with cancer, and he's been treated down here at CHOP Children's Hospital. So it's been a very emotional last 2 months for me.
At a time when you don't have a lot of time to focus on your feelings.
Well, the good thing, if there is a good thing about it, being the fact that I've been traveling around the state of Pennsylvania and. Jordan's illness has crept into this race. I've been able to get a lot of people around the state to pray for him.
Tell us something about your background and what got you into public life.
Yeah, it's something I never wanted to do, never expected to get into politics, didn't like politics growing up. My father was the city chairman of the Hazleton Democrat Party when I was small, and I thought I was going to play center field for the New York Yankees. And my family was in the road construction business. My dad had six other brothers, so there were seven brothers. They had like 30 of us, all boys. So they had a built-in workforce. That was before there were child labor laws that would have arrested them for how hard they made us work. I always thought I would just grow up like my cousins and brothers, working in the family construction company. Because that's what everybody did. When I got into high school, I realized that, I'm the youngest of four boys in my immediate family. Nobody in my family went to college, and I wanted to make my mom and dad proud. So I went off to study elementary education at Bloomsburg, married my wife, Mary Grace, while we were there. It was in my third year of college that I had an opportunity to try out with the Cincinnati Reds. So I quit school, went down to Florida. I played baseball that winter. Cincinnati claimed that I could not hit a curveball, and that seemed to be a problem for them. I don't know why. There are other pitches you can hit, but they want you to hit them all. Their outfield at that time was Geronimo, Foster, and Griffey. I guess they didn't need Lou Barletta. So they sent me home. I went back to work in the family's construction company. And it was like a low period for me. Like it was a low point in my life because I felt like I failed at everything I did. I went to college. I didn't graduate. I went to play baseball. I didn't make it. And I ended up coming home. And when you come from a large family and you're the one that's going off to do something different and you have to come home with your tail between your legs, it's humbling. And I have four daughters. I had two at the time. And couldn't finish my education because I needed money. And I got a postcard in the mail for $29.95. You can stripe your own parking lot, paint the lines in your own parking lot. And I got a great idea and went home, told my wife, my good idea was to quit my job and let's start a line painting business. I joked that she should have left me that day. She asked me what I knew about line painting. I said, not too much. There's yellow lines in the middle, white on the edges. For $29.95, you get six white aerosol cans, six yellow aerosol cans, and this little machine to put it in. And I would hide in the bushes when cars came because I didn't want anybody to see what I was using. And said, like, we need a real machine. And I walked into a bank, told them my idea, and walked out with a $2,500 line of credit, which was enough to get started. Bought a little machine. We made some money and bought another one. And 5 years, our business grew to be the largest in the state of Pennsylvania. And when we sold the business, when I became mayor of Hazleton, it was the sixth largest in the country. And I saw the politics in Hazleton. They were fighting all the time. I asked them to run government like a business. They told me that's not the way it works. I got mad and ran for city council and then mayor. And I went down a different path of life.
You were mayor of Hazleton for about 10 years, right?
Correct. And
I know that you handle a lot of fiscal issues and management issues and development issues, but the thing that really made you nationally famous was the proposed bill to penalize landlords and employers for hiring or renting to undocumented workers. There was a lawsuit, an expensive defense of the law. It became a big issue. looking back with the benefit of hindsight, was it the right course? Any regrets?
There was no question, because I saw much before anyone else in the country at that time the problem of illegal immigration and how it affects communities. And nobody was doing anything about it. And, you know, when you're in a big city like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or New York, you know, you don't really notice it. It's not transparent. The effect on the community isn't as transparent. But when you're in a small town with a limited budget, where every dollar really matters on providing services, it's a big deal. And what happened in Hazleton, we were growing again. People were coming back in the city. It was a good thing. Our population was growing. But we started seeing really big city problems, absentee landlords, overcrowded apartments, crime started rising. We started seeing gangs moving into town. Our police was stretched out. And what we found was that our population in Hazleton grew by 50%, which is a huge growth of a city, but our tax revenue stayed the same. I didn't have one extra penny to provide services to 50% more people, which means that everybody began to suffer. Our hospital was affected. Normally, you would wait 15 minutes in the emergency room if you went there. Now people were waiting 6, 7, 8 hours because people were using the emergency room for primary health care because you couldn't be denied. Our schools were affected. People were looking to me to do something. There was some of the crimes became more violent. And it was during the investigation of the crimes that we found that we had an illegal immigration problem. Now, I'm not saying that everybody that moved into the city was there illegally. I'm not saying that everybody that moved in the city were committing crimes. What we found is in investigating crimes that we found out that there's an illegal immigration problem here.
And since the bills never took effect, did they make a difference? I mean,
no, because we never were allowed to. We were never allowed to enforce them.
You know Hazleton obviously far better than I do, but I've read that the town has really come back and that Latino immigration is a big part of the reason why. Right?
Well, so the city has continued to grow, and our Latino population, contrary to what the critics said, that this was an anti-immigrant ordinance, quite the opposite. The people that the Latinos that were there legally actually supported me because they understood that I was fighting for them. I wanted them to get a better job. I wanted them to earn more money. They were competing for jobs with folks that they shouldn't have had to compete with. Their children, it impacted their children. So I saw how illegal immigration hurts legal immigrants. And so our Latino population grew every year since the ordinance. And I would argue, if Hazleton was not welcoming to the immigrants, why would you move your family there? You don't have to move to Hazleton.
Do you think it discouraged undocumented immigrants from coming in?
I think it did. I think it did. You know, but again, because we were not allowed to enforce the ordinance, you know, and you know, as far as the city, they just filed Act 47. Which means
financial distress,
and now
you
the state
left in 2010,
right? And the city now, you know, has to go under. So the financial problems continue.
Immigration is something of an issue in this campaign. You and your opponent, Mr. Casey, have talked about it. You sent out a press release recently saying that Senator Casey has no solution to the caravan invasion threatening our southern border. Now, this is a caravan that's, you know, it's basically unarmed people walking. It's hundreds of miles away. I mean, is this the kind of problem that really needs a military response?
Yeah, sure. I mean, unless you support no border at all.
Well, they'll arrive, they'll apply for asylum, and if they're refused, I mean, it's not like they're going to just
storm in, are they? Yeah, that's exactly what they're planning on doing. They're not going to the asylum line. They're going to cross the border illegally. They're going to be stopped, and they're going to get a hearing date, and they're not going to show up. And you know where they're going? They're going places like Philadelphia that become a sanctuary city, and now they're protected as well, which doesn't make anybody here safer. It doesn't help anyone here in the city of Philadelphia. You have no idea of their background. You don't know if they've been involved in any kind of crime, if they belong to any gangs. You have no idea who the folks are. That's not the way to come into the country. And it's my opponents, Bob Casey's policies, that are creating this, and that policy is called catch and release. And the reason that we're seeing the caravan is because they know under this policy that they can just cross the border, not going to the port of asylum where there's a process, just cross the border and claim fear, and then you will automatically get a hearing date. You'll never show up. And then you go find a place that's a sanctuary city, and now you're protected.
Well, immigration attorneys say that most of those folks that apply for asylum actually do show for their hearings, don't they? I mean, it takes a long time.
Well, let's talk about that. You know, those that do show up, not most show up. Not most, they don't actually show up. But those that do show up, 80% of them are fraud. They are refused because of fraud. That's an unbelievable amount. So when you think of this massive caravan of 10,000 or 12,000 folks claiming asylum and finding out 80, that's a cost to the taxpayer as well. There's a way to come into the country. If you want to come in here, you don't need to be a fraudulent story. There's a way to do it. And it's not fair to the immigrants who do wait. Why aren't we standing up for them? Why aren't we standing up for the folks around the country that want to make America their home? Through this whole campaign, they come up and thank me for what I'm doing because they knew how long it took them, how expensive it is. It's not an easy process. And then you have, politicians protecting people who are just storming the border and then claiming, going to sanctuary cities.
I want to move on. Healthcare is an increasingly big issue in this midterm election, specifically whether we'll ensure coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. There's been advertising and disputes. I mean, some fact checkers have said the Democrats have exaggerated the numbers of people that might be affected. But, you did vote for the American Health Care Act, which was the Obamacare replacement. And independent analysts have said there would be state waivers. A lot of people would lose some of those protections.
So let's talk about that as well, because that became a big issue in this campaign. Senator Casey spent a lot of money running some horrible ads that involved my, a personal issue. That being aside,
since you raised it, what we're talking about is it was a woman with twin daughters. You have twin grandchildren, one of whom is being treated for cancer, and you felt that was
insult. It goes a little further than that. These twins that my daughter have, there's a story behind their birth. They are literally miracle babies to us. My daughter wanted to be a mom and couldn't have children. And anyway, we were blessed with these twins for her. Jordan, at the age of 18 months, was diagnosed with cancer. We'll need 42 weeks of chemotherapy and radiation. It was heartbreaking to us. I was devastated. At the time that we learned of Jordan's disease, I had to go to a 9/11 ceremony in Shanksville. When I went there, Senator Casey was there with his wife. Being as upset as I was at the time, pulled him aside and had a very personal conversation with him, telling him about the birth of these twins and how important it was. And now Jordan has cancer, and we don't know if he's going to be okay. How upset I was, and how it puts this Senate campaign, the importance in perspective when I'm dealing with something like that. I left Shanksville. 4 weeks later, my brother, who I'm very close with, lived two doors down from me, died. Senator Casey also knew of the death of my brother. We had buried him on Friday, and on Saturday, the senator began running commercials mirroring our situation with twins with cancer. And the mother in that commercial said that if Lou Barletta had his way, children like mine may be denied health care, saying that I would deny children with cancer health care, knowing that my grandson is one of them. My daughter was so upset, my wife, myself. I pleaded with the senator to please take that ad down. He had been running two other pre-existing ads. This was one of three. I pleaded with him to take it down. His response to me wasn't, I'm sorry, wasn't, I didn't think about the story you told me, which I find hard to believe, but it wasn't any of that. His response was, votes have consequences, and you will be held accountable in November. That's not, I'm sorry. And because of the outrage of how hurtful and cruel that ad was, he took it down in Scranton, where both of us are, but left it up everywhere else. So it's bad, too bad for the people of Scranton, but not so bad for the folks here in Philly or Altoona or Johnstown. And not only did he not take it down in the state, he put $2.7 million behind the ad.
Well, just for the record, I mean, he did offer an apology in a statement, and then at one of the debates, he said he apologized if it hurt you. But you're right. The ad remained up in other parts of the state, yes.
So is that, I'm sorry? I'm sorry if it hurt you, but I'm going to spend $2.7 million to make sure that it continues to hurt you and your daughter when she goes down to Philadelphia with the baby, with Jordan at CHOP, and your other daughter. I mean, is that, I'm sorry, really? I mean, I think we've come to a point in American politics where there's a line. You know, you want to win an election that bad? Well, then go ahead. Unfortunately, I think people of Pennsylvania deserve better than that, and that is shameful and cruel and evil to knowing a family is hurting as bad as they are and continue to run that ad because you want an advantage in an election. And I just think Pennsylvanians deserve better.
Well, you've made that case, and they'll be able to vote on Tuesday. I do want to talk about the issue itself.
Because the commercial's not true either.
Well, the American Health Care Act, which you voted for, right? I mean, that would have, in fact, undermined those protections in some way. States could get waivers.
Okay,
right?
but 93% of the people that involved, it is clear in our bill that you cannot deny people with pre-existing conditions, period. You cannot raise...
You're saying the American Health Care Act bill?
93, yeah. Clear, period, law.
The Kaiser family analysis says when states get waivers, they can
explain this?
Yeah.
Okay, 93% of the people, if you have pre-existing conditions, you cannot be denied, period. If you have a pre-existing condition, they cannot raise your premium, period. And three, if you have a pre-existing condition, they cannot throw you off the plan. That covers 93% of the people. Now, there are 7% of the people who have let their insurance lapse. So now, if they go, you're in a state with a waiver, and they want to buy insurance because now they have a diabetes or a heart problem or some kind of pre-existing condition, the insurance company most likely will charge more because you now have a condition. We created a high-risk pool to give to the states to use to offset the cost for that 7%. So,
and a lot of analysts say it's not nearly enough for that pool.
Well, we don't know that. But how do we know that? We don't know if it's not enough, and if it isn't enough, we can put more money into it. But to run ads and make everybody believe, in fact, Senator Casey got four Pinocchios on top of it for saying 5.3 million people in Pennsylvania will be affected.
But the Washington Post challenged the numbers of people who would be affected. But let's go back. I mean, the tax bill, which you voted for, effectively eliminated the individual mandate in Obamacare. And now there's a lawsuit by attorneys general which would invalidate all of the provisions, which the Trump administration is declining to defend, in effect saying, yes, do away with all the protections of the Affordable Care Act. Is that a good approach, do you think? Do you agree with that?
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act is a terrible way of delivering health care here in Pennsylvania.
But if you take it away and we don't replace it, aren't those folks left without those protections?
No, we wouldn't take it away. We would not eliminate the Affordable Care Act without replacing it with something else that would not cost the American people so much. Our premiums went up 114%, and now we have an insurance card, but we can't afford to use it because the deductibles are so high that we can't afford the out-of-pocket expense. So therefore, there are many people who had health care and now aren't going to the doctor because they can't afford the out-of-pocket expense. So we hurt so many people who had a plan. And remember how they sold this to the American people. If you like your doctor, you can keep them. If you like your health care plan, you can keep it. Two lies. And the third one was premiums will be decreased by $2,500. That is, I mean, it's the complete opposite has happened. So, you know, it has not been a good plan. It's hurt more people than it's helped. And this was the largest tax increase, not to mention in the Affordable Care Act, they took $718 billion out of Medicare to pay for it. So why doesn't Senator Casey tell those seniors what he did to help Medicare by raiding it by $718 billion? And if that's not enough to get you mad, $750 million of taxpayer money went to people who are in the country illegally for health care.
Where does that number come from?
In tax cuts. It comes from the accountability office. $750 million went to people who were getting insurance fraudulently, tax cuts and subsidies. $750 million of taxpayer money. That's real money. How can you defend that? How can you defend higher premiums, higher deductibles, raiding Medicare, giving money to health insurance subsidies to people who are here illegally, and then want to defend that as if somehow it was good?
Right. On the other hand, tens of millions more people got coverage. There were protections for pre-existing conditions. There were things that people liked. And in the early years of the plan, the premiums were going up.
Republicans were just as determined to do away with it. Our bill had coverage for pre-existing conditions as well. But it makes for a good commercial. And if you have a lot of money and you could try to scare people who are sick, even if you trounce on your opponent's family, you know, I guess that's politics today.
Let's move on to a couple of other things because I don't want to take up too much of your time. Gun control. Bob Casey used to oppose gun control measures after the Sandy Hook killings. He says he's now for increased background checks and a ban on assault weapons, ban of bump stocks. Where are you on those?
Well, what assault weapons?
We had an assault weapon ban for 10 years. It was defined in some way, right?
I support a ban on bump stocks. I do not believe that we should put automatic weapons in the hands of anybody on the streets. We should keep them away. I believe we should keep guns away from people who shouldn't have them. We need to work on our background checks.
So you would favor some expanded background checks?
Yeah, we have to fix NICS. I mean, there are people who have fell through the cracks. And that has been a real problem, is those that should not be getting guns were getting guns, and there definitely needs to be a fix of our background check system so that that doesn't happen.
So we do need some measures, you think? We need to get a better handle on this. Abortion could be a bigger issue with changes on the Supreme Court. Would you favor a national ban on access to abortion or a right to life amendment?
So I'm 100% pro-life. Senator Casey said that he's pro-life, but he has 100% voting record for abortion. So I don't know how you could be half.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could be half pregnant. I don't know why senators not pressed on. You can't be both, senator. I mean, I know we want to win elections, but you can't tell people I'm pro-life and pro-abortion. He's got to be one, so he needs to pick one. And I would say he's on the other side because he has a 100% voting record for abortion, but yet the media still allows him to say that he's pro-life. In fact, I read it many times that he's a pro-life Democrat.
Well, he and I had a long conversation about it, and I asked him directly, would you favor restrictions on abortion? And frankly, his answer was essentially the Supreme Court has settled that. Let's move on to other things like access to birth control.
And that's true. The Supreme Court has settled that, and until it ever would get to the Supreme Court again, you know, it's the law of what it is. But I'm a 100% voter for life when I can, and I will continue to support life.
We had a terrible tragedy in Pittsburgh, and there were the mailings of bomb materials to a lot of people the last week. And as you know, there's been a lot of conversation about whether the president's rhetoric praising somebody who body slams a reporter or telling people at rallies, you know, beat them up, I'll take care of your legal bills, whether he has encouraged violence, extremism, this kind of polarization. What do you think? Does he need to tone it down? Does this have an effect?
So the man that, which I believe was, he was an anti-Semitic, you know, you could say Nazi. I mean, he wanted to kill Jews, which cannot be accepted. I mean, at any point, to blame somebody for this man, not only the man didn't like even like the president.
Right.
He doesn't even like, and everyone agrees with that, he doesn't like the president, but somehow the media still finds a connection to blame him for somebody who didn't like him when it's obvious this guy was just an anti-Semitic nut.
I mean, I don't think anybody would seriously say Donald Trump is responsible for what happened in Pittsburgh.
But even to bring him in that conversation, don't you think everybody needs to tone it down? Don't you think the best way to stop this in America, instead of pointing fingers at somebody else, is to look at yourself in the mirror and say, what can I do to make it better? Steve Scalise got shot. Was that President Trump's fault? I mean, think of what's going on. Think of what I say at times that could be better, what you say at times that could be better. But to try to find someone and everybody say it's his fault, look in the mirror of what's happening in this country. And if all of us do our part, including the media, I know they don't like it. It gets, you know, that's when, you know, the argument goes astray. Including the media, if we all do our part from top to bottom to me to everyone.
Fair enough.
I think the rhetoric comes down, but we're trying to point to the person we don't like to say it's their fault.
He is the president. He does have the biggest pulpit.
Well, and, I don't know. If you add all the media up, they got a pretty big pulpit too.
Okay.
Let's not diminish, you know, what the media can do. And listen, I mean, we saw Kathy Griffin holding a decapitated head of the president. Never in my life would I ever imagine us seeing something like that to the president of the United States, whether you like him or not. He was elected by the people. And we should respect that.
That was condemned by a lot of Democrats and a lot of people.
They don't accept that he's president. That's the problem. They don't accept that he's the president. It has been every day. Madonna wanting to blow up the White House. I mean, we could go on through newscasts for the past week and listen to things that people are saying. It's everybody. Let's all tone it down. Let's look at ourselves. How can I be a better person? How can my rhetoric be better? And if we do this, I think it'll be a better country.
You're not Donald Trump, although you've been a supporter, and he's been a supporter of yours. And I just have to ask you, because I know a lot of people who cover state politics and say that they've had a really congenial relationship with Lou Barletta. So I have to ask you, do you think the media are enemies of the people?
No, I think, I've dealt with the local media for a long time. From my time as mayor, it goes all the way back to 2000. And I think, you know, when you get into local media, that's who I deal with most of the time. There's some of the most honorable people I know. I mean, they report it the way it is. A lot of people I deal with, I can't tell if they're Democrat or Republican. When you get to the national level, it's a whole nother ballgame. I mean, we wear our parties on our sleeve, and there's no doubt who we stick for and who we hope scores and who we hope doesn't score. And I think that's sad. I remember growing up, I couldn't tell you if Walter Cronkite was a Democrat or Republican. He reported the news. And I think there's a big part of our population in America that wishes we can get back to that again, where we can just report the news. We can talk, you know, afterwards and say who we like and we don't like. But I think everybody has sides now, and they're tuning to the station that, you know, plays to their side. And that divides America. And I would hope it can get better, because the division in Washington is so wide, and now the division in America, and we're all trying to find out who's to blame. When I think we all need to get back to just report the news and you know, unless it's an opinion show, then of course. But
okay, but is enemies of the people going too far? I mean, that's a pretty incendiary thing to say.
I didn't say it. I wouldn't say it. But I mean, put yourself in someone else's shoes. If when 90% of the news is not positive, it's negative towards you, when you have steered one of the best economies you and I have seen in a long time, when North Korea is at the table, when ISIS is just about gone, when these trade deals have been better for the American people, when there are actually more jobs than people unemployed, when black unemployment's at an all-time low, Hispanic unemployment's at an all-time low, we have a lot to celebrate. The stock market's doing very well for us. And you're still getting 90% negative stories. How would you feel when your family's attacked, when you're attacked, and you think you're doing a pretty good job for the American people? 90% of it is negative. Do you think, I mean, how, put yourself in that person's shoes and how they would feel. How would you feel? So, I don't think anyone can throw a rock here.
Our time is near an end, and I want to let you go. But I just want to ask, is there anything else you want us to know about your experience or goals that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I look at Pennsylvania's future. You know, I was a mayor, and you know, I wanted to do the best I can do for Hazleton. And in my congressional district, what I saw most, what I hear most, is I have a lot of senior citizens, and they're sad because their children have moved out of Pennsylvania because they couldn't find a job. And they're sad because they didn't get to see their grandchildren grow up. And I think that the next person that's going to be the senator of Pennsylvania here should have a vision for Pennsylvania as to how we're going to keep our kids here. I want to see my grandchildren grow up. I don't want my children to go to another state. And I think we need to look at a record. Has Senator Casey in the past 12 years done a lot? And what's his vision for keeping our families here in Pennsylvania? I do have a vision for Pennsylvania, and we have a great opportunity where we can be a manufacturing state because of the energy that we have. You know, you go out to western Pennsylvania, it's wet gas out there, natural gas, and they have a cracker plant that will bring manufacturing here to Pennsylvania. We have anthracite coal up in the northeast part of the state where there are 19 rare earth minerals that exist in that anthracite coal that they use for missile defense systems, cell phones, computers. Right now, America buys 100% from China. China sells 85% to the world. Pennsylvania can become a state among nations, and we can bring the kind of jobs that can keep our kids here in Pennsylvania and watch our grandchildren grow up here in Pennsylvania. The economy is going pretty good. I want to keep that going. So that's, I have a vision for Pennsylvania. I think Senator Casey's looking for 6 more years. In the past 12, I can't tell you a lot of what he's done. So I don't, you know, if we're applying for this job, I think, you know, if someone doesn't have a vision for the next 6 years and the other person does, and it's a real vision, I think people have a tough choice to make here.
Congressman Barletta, thanks so much for
spending
some time with us.
Thank you.